Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Over the course of our Project Milwaukee series, The Currency of Water, we've discussed the impact that water innovation could have on various sectors of the Milwaukee economy. But regardless of whether or how the water industry develops here, there are basic global water problems in need of solutions. Catherine Bliss believes solving these problems is vital, both for the underdeveloped countries that have them and the countries who can supply the expertise to solve them. Bliss is a senior fellow of the Global Health Policy Center at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. She joins us in the studio to put the global water crisis in context. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Can you describe the extent of the need in terms of water worldwide right now?
Well, the challenges with respect to water internationally, you know, break down into a number of different categories. But with respect to availability of water, one of the biggest challenges is the fact that nearly a billion people, 884 million people, do not actually have access to an improved drinking water source. So that means they may have a tap in their courtyard, or they may have, you know, some kind of well nearby, but that water is not safe for them to drink. And that causes significant illness. About 1.5 million deaths each year are attributable to waterborne disease, and most of those are children. There are statistics that suggest that between 4,000 and 5,000 children die every day because of water-related disease.
And are there other ramifications aside from health? Is there also a security and stability angle to this, either globally or within the particular countries that are especially hard hit by the situation?
Well, one of the challenges is that, you know, right now, people estimate that about 450 million people worldwide face water scarcity. That is, they don't get enough water for their daily needs, which include drinking and hygiene and consumption and productivity as well. But some people are suggesting that by the year 2025, two-thirds of the world's population will face water scarcity. And so, you know, that would be in countries, you know, in continents across the globe. So while that poses, you know, the health challenges that you might imagine, it also poses the potential for conflict within communities and between states as well. And this is something, you know, that we've seen a little bit of this year with Mexico City. Mexico City has had, you know, a challenge with respect to getting enough water for its, you know, very, very large population. And, you know, in communities where water hasn't, you know, been able to be delivered or, you know, hasn't been delivered on a consistent basis, you know, there have been struggles within the community over who gets access to water when and what, you know, what that means down the road.
Well, and it sounds like this is a situation that is actually getting worse in recent years. Is it simply population pressures or are there other things at work?
There are population pressures. That's a large part of it. Urbanization also creates challenges for water availability and water delivery. You know, the freshwater resources around the world are not necessarily distributed right where population centers are. And so
you're saying a water supply that could have supported a city of 500,000 is just not adequate to support a city of 3 million.
Well, that's part of it. But also, you know, you have the Amazon River, which is, you know, a region with lots of fresh water, but not a lot of people are living in the rainforest there. And so in many cases, water resources are not accessible to the populations that need them. But also, the growth of urban centers creates challenges from the perspective of the distribution of water, the amount of time that people spend, you know, gathering water within cities, the quality of water that they have available for, you know, for consumption, for productivity and other purposes.
Is climate change playing a role as well? And is it playing a role in simply the scarcity issue or is it playing a role in the quality issue?
I think it's probably playing a role in both. On the one hand, with respect to water scarcity, you know, right now in some regions of the world, you know, where glaciers are melting, some populations may be experiencing a greater flow of water and availability of water for agriculture and other purposes. Over time, however, that water may not be available for, you know, in a sustainable sense for the kind of work that those communities are engaged in. And then in terms of water quality, climate change is projected to negatively impact water quality in the sense that warmer temperatures in some regions may lead to, you know, a situation where water is either more frequently contaminated or, you know, has bacteria and other pathogens that are dangerous to human health.
Can you speak to, you mentioned Mexico City, but clearly the problem is a global one. Can you speak to the areas where the need is greatest or where the situation is at its most dire at this stage?
Well, at this point, the greatest challenges with respect to access to water, to safe drinking water, are in sub-Saharan Africa and in Asia. And this is not just water quality, but also access to sanitation. And the greatest percentage of people without access to and improve drinking water sources in sub-Saharan Africa. But the greatest number of people, you know, because of the fact that population in Asia is so much greater, the greatest number of people without access to those services is in Asia.
You spoke to urbanization as being one of the stressors. Is this an issue that, by and large, affects people in these large cities in developing countries? Or are these issues of water, sanitation, and hygiene ubiquitous in the developing world? They're just different in more rural parts of the developing world.
Well, access to what the UN defines as an improved drinking water source is actually, in urban areas, is actually pretty good. I think it's, you know, around 90% or so, and that's been a number that I think has been fairly stable over a period of time. But there are significant disparities not only between urban and rural areas, but also within urban areas themselves. So, you know, in a city, wealthier areas may count on, you know, access to a piped system that, you know, is maintained either privately or publicly, whereas people who live in slums or informal settlements either, you know, don't have access to pipes or those aren't maintained, and so the possibility for recontamination is pretty significant. In rural areas, there has been significant progress in terms of creating access to improved drinking water, but access to sanitation remains a significant challenge in many parts of the world, especially in rural areas.
What do you think the U.S. contribution to alleviating this crisis should be? Is it one of money? Is it one of technology? Is it one of a variety of things?
The U.S. has been engaged on international water issues for a number of decades, both on the health level, on the infrastructure level, at the policy level, and, you know, through a variety of different mechanisms. The recent trend toward greater availability or allocation of resources by Congress, you know, I think bodes well for future U.S. actions on this issue. In 2005, Congress approved and then President Bush signed the Senator Paul Simon Water for the Poor Act, which basically made as an aspect of foreign policy a commitment to extending services, water services, to the world's most vulnerable and impoverished populations. By 2008, Congress had then, you know, kind of complemented that with an allocation, a significant allocation of funds, including, I think, $300 million for sub-Saharan Africa for those particular kinds of projects. But, you know, money is part of the equation, and, you know, government money is part of it. But, you know, I think another significant aspect is improving, you know, the commitment of local governments themselves to invest their resources and, you know, understand the need for addressing water-related challenges. And at the same time, it's important to understand the role that community members themselves can play in advocating for greater attention to water issues, in managing their water resources, not just for domestic consumption, but also for agriculture and other productive uses in the community, and, you know, really improving the ways in which water is governed at the community level, at the regional level, nationally and internationally, how we talk about it.
So do you think that the solutions in many of these places are going to be policy-driven as much as anything?
I think policies have the potential to set the stage for programs that will, you know, ultimately be, you know, the drivers of successful, you know, initiatives. But if the world can come together and agree, as, you know, in many cases the world has over a series of international conferences over the past two decades, on, you know, the important principles for managing water and for encouraging investments in the water sector, then that's a good start. The commitment of funds from governments, from donor agencies, from local governments, as well as the private sector, not just sort of the international private sector, but also local level initiatives to support the production of products that people can use to protect their health, you know, by treating water in their homes, you know, can also play a role in poverty alleviation, in improving water quality, and in, you know, bringing improved access to some of the 884 million people who don't have it right now.
It sounds like this is an issue of money as much as it is of technology.
I think it's money, technology, and political will, probably all three of those issues.
You talk about the looming problem being a scarcity one, and it's sort of one thing to be able to treat existing water, but what are the solutions that are being looked towards to provide water in places where that water doesn't exist? That sounds like a completely different issue, and one that might require some more significant technology and fiscal outlays to move forward.
Well, as you know, back in 2000, the international, you know, countries agreed to the Millennium Development Goals, and goal number 7 is to ensure environmental sustainability, and one of the targets in that is to reduce by half the proportion of people without access to water and sanitation. And the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development estimates that it's going to cost $18 billion a year to just to meet that, to, and that's reducing by half the proportion, and then another $54 billion to maintain the services to people who already have them. So the need for financial resources is considerable, and that will require investments from private and public actors. At the same time, you know, especially, you know, when you bring up this question of water scarcity, improving cooperation, improving the management of water, the governance of water at the local, regional, and national levels, and cooperation between states that, you know, may share freshwater resources, either a river border or a lake border, is also very important. This is something that in the United States we've done for a long time, and I know in Milwaukee this is probably, you know, an issue that people are quite familiar with, being on the Great Lakes. But, you know, this is something that, you know, between the U.S. and Mexico has been going on since the 1880s, and between the U.S. and Canada since 1909. In many parts of the world, though, there are, you know, maybe many, multiple countries that share a river, in the Amazon and the Nile Basin and other places. And so developing the kinds of mechanisms that will allow the countries that share those river borders to communicate, to cooperate, and to agree, you know, to negotiate and agree on a method for allocating those precious resources is very important.
Is it essentially, I mean, is it mainly an ethical imperative that drives the global role in alleviating the global water crisis? Or are there other factors?
I was reading recently that the Water Supply and Sanitation Collaborative Council recently called the failure to ensure access to improved drinking water and sanitation for the entire world's population the greatest scandal that has happened in the last 50 years. And so, you know, the fact that many countries have been able to provide, you know, water for their populations, the fact that the technologies are out there, you know, suggests that, you know, there's something else at play. And it's money, it's political will. I mean, there are many different aspects to that. But, you know, at the same time, I think many people are also looking at the economic implications of failing to provide safe drinking water and sanitation to communities. You know, on the one hand, there are something like 300 million school days lost each year by children who become sick, you know, because of water-related disease. And I think another 325 million productive work days. So that's when, you know, adults are sick and having to stay home because, you know, they've contracted a water-related disease. It's because parents, usually mothers, are staying home to take care of children. You know, I think there's another estimate that half of the world's hospital beds in developing countries at any given time are occupied by people suffering from water-related disease. So there are considerable economic and opportunity costs to failing to address the water issue as well.
Well, Catherine Bliss, thank you so much for spending some time and helping us put this in context.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Catherine Bliss is a senior fellow of the Global Health Policy Center at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. She spoke about global water and sanitation issues this fall at the Institute of World Affairs at UW-Milwaukee. There's a link to her report on U.S. leadership on drinking water and sanitation from WUWM.com. That's also where you'll find an archive of all the Lake Effect and WUWM news segments that make up our series, Project Milwaukee, The Currency of Water. Tomorrow on the program, Robert Glennon talks about his blueprint for solving the water crisis in the United States. He says it can't be driven by technology alone. But next on the program, it's the Arts Page with an exhibit focused on a Milwaukee holiday tradition from decades ago. Keep listening. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.